Chapter 5. As the guard raised his axe, something fell out of the trees above and landed in the crowd with a grunt. Several of the soldiers were flung to the ground. Sabrina craned her neck to get a better look at the chaos and was surprised to find an enormous striped cat fighting the cards. It was nearly as big as she was and had a bushy tail and a big mouth full of teeth. It swatted men left and right with its oversized paws, and despite its fierce assault, a clever, almost happy smile stretched across its face. His attack was accompanied by a high-pitched whistle, which signaled more bizarre creatures to rush into the melee. Soon, a giant puppy and an odd bird with an enormous beak were fighting by the cat's side. The card soldiers were befuddled. They jabbed their swords at the odd collection of animals. "Shoo! Shoo, you flea-bitten curses!" The animals held their ground. The puppy charged at the men and sent them flailing into the woods. The unusual bird slammed its hard beak into the heads of villains. From the queen's party, the white rabbit ran out to join them. "What is the meaning of this?" the queen bellowed. "We are busting out," the white rabbit said, swinging his pocket watch threateningly. The queen fell back in shock, and the rabbit turned his attention to the hooded guard. "If you know what's good for you." The guard set down his axe and ran, allowing the rabbit to untie Sabrina. "Allow me to propose a deal," the creature said as it hopped over to untie Daphne. "In exchange for saving your lives, you will allow us to accompany you out of this book." "What?" "A simple business transaction, child. When you come upon the next door, you will allow my companions and me to join you with the intended goal of leaving the Book of Ever After. Do we have a deal?"
Sabrina was too distracted by the fighting to think clearly, but the little furry animal persisted.
"What say you?"
the rabbit cried as it cut the bindings on Puck's hands. The rabbit was so busy talking, he didn't notice a soldier rushing at him with a sword aimed at his chest. The giant cat leaped in the soldier's way, forcing him to stop in his tracks. He swung his weapon hard and fast at the feline's neck, but just before it landed its deadly blow, the cat's body disappeared, leaving only his big, toothy grin behind.
"He's the Cheshire Cat," Daphne said, biting her palm.
The Cheshire Cat reappeared and grabbed the soldier's legs with its mouth. He dragged the distressed man up a tree to the highest branches and drove a sharp one right through its card body. It didn't seem to hurt the soldier, but it did leave him helpless, kicking and struggling to free himself. A moment later, the cat fell from the tree, only to land on all fours. He shook out his coat and smiled. Meanwhile, the puppy took several of the villains in its mouth and wrenched them around violently before dropping them on the ground, dizzy and battered. The bird, whom Sabrina would later learn was a long-extinct dodo, knocked many of the men out with a swift clunk of its rock-hard head. The white rabbit mostly just barked commands and warned the others of approaching attacks. It wasn't long before the big animals had wiped out a majority of the queen's army. Those who were still able fled into the woods, along with the queen and the king and their flock of courtiers.
"Quick work," the dodo squawked.
"And not a scratch on us," the puppy said, before his attention turned to catching his own tail.
"Just as I predicted," the white rabbit bragged.
He stepped over some of the unconscious soldiers, bouncing on one's head before he reached the children. He bowed in respect.
"Allow me to introduce myself."
"No need," Sabrina said, unable to hide her disgust. "We know who you are."
"I beg your pardon?"
"You're the White Rabbit, and a member of the Scarlet Hand," Sabrina said.
"The Scarlet what?"
the rabbit said.
"You're part of Mirror's army," Puck explained.
The rabbit turned to his friends, and then reached up and felt his head.
"Was I struck in the chaos? I'm having some trouble understanding this conversation. Children, I have never met any of you, ever. I'm sure I would remember. I don't know any Mirror,
nor have I ever counted myself amongst any army. Certainly not a scarlet one.
He's not lying, Daphne said, frowning. We've never met him. This isn't our white rabbit. This is the fake one from this stupid book.
Puck rolled his eyes.
All this real world or storybook world talk is giving me a headache. The only question that matters is, can I roast him for dinner or not?
No, Sabrina said, finally understanding her sister's explanation.
Daphne's right. He's not a villain. None of them are.
You come from the world outside the book, correct?
The dodo said. Sabrina nodded.
We're here looking for...
Hey, where did Pinocchio go?
She scanned their surroundings. The little traitor was nowhere to be seen.
He must have run off in all the chaos, Daphne said.
This Pinocchio is important to you?
The dodo squawked.
We're in this book to save our brother from a man known as Mirror. To stop him, we made a deal with the editor. If we capture Pinocchio before he can make changes to his story, then the editor will help us with our problem. We've been trying to find the little jerk, and now we've lost him.
We can help, the Cheshire Cat said. Then you can free us.
Absolutely not, Sabrina said. You will slow us down.
You agreed,
the White Rabbit argued.
I did not, Sabrina said. I barely understood a word you said. I was a bit distracted trying to keep my head from being cut off.
I'm not sure we can take them even if we wanted to, Daphne added. They aren't real.
The second we leave the book, we'll be as real as you, the rabbit said.
You don't want to leave this book anyway, Sabrina said. The town we live in is on fire, and our house is not much more than a demolition site.
You say all that like it's a bad thing,
Puck said, surprised.
Anything would be better than the endless tedium of being a character in a story that never ends,
the dodo said.
What does tedium mean?
Daphne asked.
Tedium is kind of a boredom due to repetition.
What does repetition mean?
Having to do something over and over again. It's like brushing your teeth or changing your underwear. Eventually, you just give up,
Puck said.
The Cheshire Cat ignored him.
This story never ends. When it gets to the last page, we are all sent back to the beginning. Each day we say the same things, wear the same clothes, and a few of us meet the same untimely deaths. Imagine living a life where you cannot make your own decisions, lest you be devoured and rewritten. Imagine being stuck in the same day forever and ever.
I just want to chase squirrels, the puppy whimpered. That's all, but the editor is mean. I did it once and he sent the monsters to fix me.
None of us volunteered to be in a living history book, and no one asks us if we are happy. The editor is unsympathetic to our plight. Thus, we have come to this drastic decision. The only way to escape our bondage is to escape the book,
the White Rabbit said.
The editor is not going to be happy, Sabrina warned. We've met him, and he doesn't seem like the kind of guy who's going to be pleased that you four are taking a vacation.
Who put him in charge? He rules over us without thought or mercy,
the dodo said.
Any little change in the story, and our very existence is wiped clean.
If things are so bad, why haven't you gone through one of the doors yourself? Daphne asked.
We've tried, the puppy barked. We can't open the doors. Only outsiders can do that.
Sabrina took a deep breath.
She wished she could get away and think. That was the problem with being a Grimm. There was never any time to contemplate a decision. If only she could find a quiet tree and some time to analyze the character's requests. She hadn't been lying about the editor. She suspected he would be furious. But she could also be sympathetic. When she found out he was the master, Mirror had told her a little of what his life was like as a prisoner. She would have done anything to free him if she'd known he was suffering. But he had never shared his pain. These four characters, strange as they were, wanted something she might be able to provide. On the other hand, They were four more people who were going to turn to her to lead them. They were four more people putting their lives and destinies in her hands. No, they couldn't come. What if something went wrong?
All right. You can come with us, but let's get something clear first,
Daphne said before Sabrina could answer.
We're not strolling through these stories because they're fun. We're looking for Pinocchio. We can't have anyone slowing us down. You fall behind, you're on your own. If you get hurt, we will leave you. If the editor sends revisers after you, we cannot stop to save you. And trust me, they're gross. So keep up.
Agreed, the White Rabbit said. We will not be a burden, and in return, we offer our assistance in your search. This Pinocchio you speak of sounds like a powerful foe. You may need all the help you can get.
I will bite him, the puppy said.
Leave the biting to the experts, Puck said, and bared his teeth.
There's just one last thing, Sabrina said as she searched the ground for the unconscious body of the Nine of Diamonds.
When she found him, she leaned over and snatched the ball of magic yarn out of his pocket. The old tingle of magic was there, so she quickly tossed it to Daphne. The Cheshire Cat let out a loud squeal and leaped into the air. He caught the ball in his mouth and landed on all fours. Then he spit it out and batted it back and forth with his striped paws. Daphne shrieked and rushed over and yanked it from his grasp.
Bad kitty, she chastised. This is our way out of here. It's leading us to Pinocchio.
Intriguing, the White Rabbit replied. I don't mean to be rude, but I believe it would be wise to get out of this particular story as soon as possible. The editor has to have noticed the changes to our story by now.
I agree, the Dodo cried.
Luckily, we're at the end of this tale, so all we have to do is find the door, Daphne said,
and then whispered instructions to the yarn. It hopped out of her hands and rolled into the woods. They gave chase, and soon came to a door standing amongst the bank of trees. As she was the first one to arrive, Daphne turned the doorknob, and it swung open with a blast of wind so powerful, Sabrina feared it might knock her off her feet. Struggling against the violent air, she turned and urged her new companions to follow.
This is it!
Be brave, friends,
the White Rabbit said to his fellow rebels. He smoothed out the wrinkles in his jacket and slid a monocle in front of his eye. Then he hopped forward and disappeared through the doorway. The puppy let out a happy howl and rushed in after him. The Cheshire Cat tucked his head down and pulled his ears back, and a moment later he was gone too.
I had my doubts this day would come, the Dodo said as he stared at the open doorway. Save it for your diary, pal, Puck said, kicking him in the behind and forcing him into the abyss. We're in a hurry.
A moment later, the children were charging forward into the unknown. When the world came back into focus, the group found themselves in the thick undergrowth of a huge forest. Almost immediately, they spotted Pinocchio several yards from where they were standing. The boy was bent over, with hands on his knees, trying to catch his breath. When he spotted them, he cursed creation itself, and then hefted the birdcage he had taken from the card soldiers and freed his wooden minions.
Keep these fools away from me, Pinocchio ordered.
Then he dashed off into the forest.
Not the puppets again, Sabrina complained.
Don't worry, honey bunny, Puck said, as the creatures raced toward them. I won't let anyone put a finger on my sweetums.
The Trickster King never got a chance to defend her, or himself. The marionettes hopped onto his back and legs. They untied his shoelaces and yanked on his hair. When he managed to brush them off, they jumped onto Sabrina. She swatted at them, but even when she managed to knock one off, another took its place. Finally, the Dodo helped out. First, it smashed the marionette that looked like Granny Relda, and then the one made to resemble Veronica, Sabrina and Daphne's mother, with its hard head. That left only the figures that looked like Daphne, Uncle Jake, and Henry Grimm, father of the Grimm girls. The Cheshire Cat snatched them up in his mouth while the puppy furiously dug a hole. The cat spit them out
and the dog buried them. All of the marionettes had finally met their end. Sabrina charged into the woods after Pinocchio, and after only a few steps, she spotted him. He was standing before a giant shoe. It was nearly 20 feet high and was brown with a gigantic and tarnished brass buckle on top. Carved into the shoe's heel was a door decorated with a festive garland and a little mat on the ground that read, "Welcome." Sabrina watched the boy swing the door open, rush inside, and slam the door behind him.
"No way," Daphne said, as she caught up with Sabrina.
"What?" the Cheshire Cat asked when he and his friends joined the children.
"This can't be real," Sabrina said.
"Hello," Puck cried impatiently. "What story is this?"
"It's the little old lady who lived in a shoe," Daphne said,
and then bit into her palm.
"Never heard of it," the Dodo squawked.
"Never heard of it?" Daphne exclaimed. "Everyone knows this story."
"I don't," Puck said. "If it's in a book, I'm blissfully unaware of its existence."
"It goes like this. There once was an old lady who lived in a shoe. She had so many children she didn't know what to do. Honestly, I don't know the rest."
"There's no monster?" Puck said. Daphne shook her head. "No dragon? No witch? No one gets eaten?"
"No,"
Sabrina said.
"Then what are we doing out here? Let's go in there and grab that pointy-nosed loser," Puck said.
He marched up to the door and threw it open, only to be drowned in a flood of filthy children squeezing out of the door and running into the woods. There were hundreds, maybe even thousands. It was hard to tell, as they just kept coming and coming like the bubbles in a shaken bottle of soda. The Dodo snatched the puppy and flew into the air, while the rabbit straddled the cat and was carried high into the branches of a tree. Sabrina and Daphne had to leap out of the way to avoid being trampled. A frail old woman appeared in the doorway.
"Have fun," she called, "and don't be late for supper. We're having broth."
She spotted the group of interlopers, eyed them angrily, and whispered, "Go away," before slamming the door closed. The girls rushed to help Puck to his feet. The poor boy had been trampled and had little shoe prints all over his body.
"Are you okay?"
Sabrina said.
"I would have preferred a monster," Puck said, much the worse for wear.
"He's using the children to escape," Daphne said. "He's hiding in the crowd."
"I'll get him," Puck said,
as his wings sprang from his back. They flapped a bit, but he didn't seem to have the energy to get off the ground. It was pointless anyway. A door appeared across the clearing, and Pinocchio raced toward it from the woods. Before anyone could stop him, he had slipped through and slammed it behind him. The door then dissolved before their eyes. Sabrina sat down beside the shoe. She was tired, hungry, and angry. She knew everyone was looking to her for answers. But besides her sister and Puck, she couldn't have cared less about any of them.
"I beg your forgiveness, but what do we do next?"
the White Rabbit asked.
"Shouldn't we go after the boy?"
"We eat," Puck said.
Sabrina wondered if the boy's sudden leadership was his way of taking some of the pressure off of her. But then she shook her head. Puck was incapable of being so sensitive. The rabbit and the cat groused a bit but said nothing that would start an argument. The puppy sniffed the air and claimed he could lead them to wild berries. Sabrina wasn't sure it was wise to step outside the boundaries of the story again. The last thing she or the others needed was another encounter with that thing that lurked there. Still, everyone was famished. There was no point in putting everyone in danger, so she insisted that Puck and Daphne and the others stay behind. She and the puppy searched for the fruit and came across a bank of walnut trees and an abandoned garden filled with carrots and cucumbers. Sabrina filled her pockets with all she could carry and headed back to the camp. While they were gone, Puck had built a fire. It was far bigger than they would need,
But once they got it under control, they sat and shared the food with the others. "Please tell us of the real world," the Cheshire Cat begged, as he munched on some berries.
"Yes," the puppy dog yipped. "What's it like?"
"Well, that depends on who you ask," Sabrina said. "Most people live pretty uneventful lives."
"But not you,"
the white rabbit said. Puck laughed.
"Not at all."
"Yeah, our lives are nonstop excitement," Daphne said. "We're always fighting monsters and saving the world."
"Monsters?"
the white rabbit cried. "Just in our hometown," Sabrina said. "The rest of the world, for the most part, is happily dull. Unfortunately, once you step into Fairyport Landing, you'll be as stuck there as you are in this book. There's a spell that traps ever-afters within the town limits." The animals shared uncomfortable looks and were quiet for a moment.
"I'll happily trade this prison for another," the dodo said. "At least there is no one watching your every move and making sure you do as you're told."
"You mentioned that I was different from your white rabbit,"
the rabbit said sheepishly.
"Yeah, he's a jerk," Puck said,
his face smeared with purple juice.
"Evil, too. Not that being evil necessarily makes you a bad person or anything."
The white rabbit gasped. It was easy to see he was offended.
"See, the real white rabbit is a member of a very mean group called the Scarlet Hand. They're trying to take over the world," Daphne explained.
"This boy you're chasing, Pinocchio, is he their leader?" the cat asked.
"No, but he's a member," Sabrina said. "Their leader is traveling through this book, too. His name is Mirror. He's the magic mirror from Snow White's story. He was a friend of ours, or at least we thought he was. But he betrayed us and kidnapped our little brother. He wants to steal his body for himself so that he can be a real person."
"Well, you have my help, and if I can speak for the others, all of our help," the dodo said.
The puppy dog growled.
"It is the very least we can do for the amazing opportunity you are giving us."
The characters continued their questions about the world of the living. They were fascinated with little things like cars and phones and indoor plumbing. The white rabbit had a difficult time accepting the idea that the real world had very few talking animals. "It's got very few clinically insane hat makers, too," Sabrina grumbled. Eventually, the berries and nuts were gone, and all the chatter started to give Sabrina a sharp headache. She told Puck to shout for her if a door appeared, and then excused herself to walk into the woods for some solitude. She knew she'd hardly be missed. The refugees from Wonderland continued their party with songs and stories of the lives they intended to build in the real world. They were prisoners broken from their cages, and it was a day to rejoice. But Sabrina didn't feel much like celebrating.
"Mind if I sit?"
Daphne asked, appearing from nowhere.
"Where's Puck?"
"He's got the puppy chasing his own tail, and he's laughing like an idiot," the little girl said, as she sat down against a tree.
"I have come to ask you what you've done with my sister."
Sabrina shook her head. "I don't understand."
"I know you aren't really Sabrina Grimm," Daphne said. "I know you are a fake. The real Sabrina doesn't act like you at all. For instance, my sister never asks other people for their opinions on what she should do."
Sabrina sighed.
"Normally, I find it annoying," Daphne continued. "I mean, she almost never asks me what I think, and that makes me fighting mad sometimes. But never, in all the time we've spent in Fairyport Landing, has she ever asked Puck what to do. Who are you, and what have you done with the real Sabrina Grimm?"
"I'm afraid I'll make the wrong choices." Daphne was quiet.
"'Cause you trusted Mirror, and he turned out to be the bad guy?"
Sabrina was surprised by her sister's insight. It was another sign that Daphne wasn't such a little girl anymore.
"How did you guess?"
I trusted him too," Daphne said. "He was like an uncle to me. When he turned out to be the master, I couldn't believe I hadn't figured it out myself. I looked back on all our time with him,
and I started to see the clues, the two faces he showed, one for the reflection and one for the Hall of Wonders, and the fact that whenever we were discussing a plan around him, the bad guys always seemed to know, and all those mirrors we found around town. Nottingham and Hart have a couple, and Oz had one in his workroom. There was one in Rumpelstiltskin's office. I'm sure Jack had one in his apartment. He was sending messages to his evil army through them. Why didn't I see it? I'm a Grimm. I'm a detective. I have mad fighting skills and can zap someone with a magic wand like nobody's business. But I didn't see it. If you made the same bad decision to have trusted him, why aren't you panicking now? Sabrina asked. Daphne shrugged. Mirror wants us to be off balance. That way we'll have a tougher time stopping him. I'm not going to let him keep messing with me. But when the people in your life betray you, how do you know which decisions are right? Who knows what the right thing is anymore? Daphne said as she munched on the last of her walnuts. What do you mean? Well, I've been thinking about what Mirror is doing. He's clearly lost his mind, and it's horrible what he's trying to do. But, you know, he kind of has a point. He's been trapped in that mirror for hundreds of years. He's had owners who were cruel to him. He wants out so he can be like the rest of us. He's still a monster, but I can see where he's coming from. And this editor? Well, his job is to keep the stories the same. If he doesn't, then it affects the real world. The editor has to fix this stuff, which isn't fair to the characters, but it's his job. And then there's the people in this book. Why should they have to sit in some boring story all the time? That's not fair. You're quite the sympathizer, Sabrina said. Pretend I'm not a dictionary, and I don't know what that word means. It means that you understand the problems of others, Sabrina said. I guess I do, but not when you mess with my family. Whether Mirror has a point or not, he hurt me, and you, and everyone I love. That's when I know when my decisions are right or wrong. Protecting my family will always be right. Sabrina blinked. And you're accusing me of being an imposter? When did you get so wise? Back at home, Puck and I have been staying up and watching old westerns on TV, Daphne said. All the cowboys talk like that. When Sabrina and Daphne returned to the group, the fire had died down, and the others were waiting expectantly. What now? The Cheshire Cat asked. Sabrina turned to Daphne. The little girl gave her a knowing look and then smiled. It was a relief to have her sister's approval. I think we need to recreate the ending. This story is so short it might be easy. New ending, new door.
Interesting, but how? The White Rabbit said.
This little old lady lives in a shoe. She's got so many kids she doesn't know what to do. Sounds like she needs a little help organizing, Sabrina said. Puck, can you take the others and find the children? Get them back to the shoe on the double. Daphne and I will stay here and get everything ready. It wasn't long before the children were hurrying back to the house. It helped that Puck had transformed himself into a pterodactyl and was buzzing over the crowd so that they ran for their lives. When the children were gathered, Sabrina looked out on the hundreds of them. All right, kids, listen up, Sabrina said. You have had it too easy. Your mother feeds you, clothes you, washes your laundry, and keeps your rooms clean. She's exhausted. She's inside taking a much-needed nap. While she's having a little me time, we're going to get this shoe in shape. So, if your name starts with the letter A, raise your hand. A dozen children raised their hands. You are going to mow this yard, rake the leaves, and clean out the gutters, Daphne said. The children whined. No fuss, Sabrina cried. If your name starts with B, you're on laundry. There's a pile of dirty socks in there a mountain high. They need to be washed, dried, folded, and put away.
If your name starts with a C, you've got dish duty, Daphne added.
Wash, dry, and put away. And remember, there is a trick to loading the dishwasher. Don't overfill it. The chores went on all the way to Zed, Zelma, and the rest of the Z's. Sabrina and her group stood by and watched as the children washed windows, swept the walkway, bagged grass clippings, and beat the dust out of rugs. When the little old woman came outside, she had tears in her eyes.
"Thank you, thank you," she cried.
Just then, a door appeared behind Sabrina.
"Let's get the ball rolling," she said to her sister.
Daphne whispered something into the magic yarn, and it hopped out of her hand. When Puck opened the door, it rolled right through it. Puck was next, followed by Daphne. Sabrina gestured for the others to follow and stepped through the portal last, unsure of where they would land. When Sabrina could see again, she was at the bottom of a rocky hill crowned with a majestic castle. It overlooked a crisp green valley and a churning river less than a mile away. Unlike the crumbling castles Sabrina had seen in her father's travel magazines, this one was pristine, almost as if it were brand new. Its walls were constructed from gleaming white stones, and its towers stretched toward the clouds. A turret sat on the rooftop, where a proud orange flag featuring a fierce black griffin flapped in the wind. Before Sabrina could ask her sister which story they had entered, there was a loud explosion, and the blue sky turned an angry red.
"Dear, dear," the Cheshire Cat said, as it hid behind Daphne. "We've stepped into a war zone."
There was another explosion that echoed across the valley, and a moment later, one of the castle's towers toppled over and crashed against the rocks below. The next thing Sabrina knew, three knights in full armor came charging over a drawbridge and straight toward them. Sabrina stepped out of the way, only to fall to the ground with a thud. She wasn't expecting to be wearing a heavy suit of armor. Puck pulled her to her feet with much effort.
"Sir Galahad! Sir Bedivere!"
one of the men in armor shouted to the girls. It was suddenly clear they had been placed in the roles of knights.
"The editor has sent a sorcerer to put down our rebellion. He has invaded the castle, and our dear Merlin is fighting him off. But he is very powerful. He has attacked the castle. But he will not stop our cause. Freedom will be ours."
"Cause?"
Sabrina asked.
"What cause?"
"To escape this book, of course," the second knight said proudly. "We are members of the Character Liberation Army. We are working to leave this story, and clearly the editor has unleashed a horror on us aimed at ending our quest."
The third knight looked as if he were ready to add more to the conversation when he rubbed his eyes and stared at the group.
"What manner of creatures are you?"
Sabrina turned to look at her group. A giant puppy, an extinct bird, a rabbit wearing clothes, a man-sized cat, a boy with pink fairy wings, not to mention Daphne and herself, two little girls in ill-fitting suits of armor.
"Long story," Sabrina said to the knight. "What story is this?"
The third knight gasped.
"You've come from another story?" "Can it be?"
the first knight cried.
"You are in league with the editor,"
the second knight shouted. At once, the three knights removed their swords from their sheaths. Puck pulled out his own toy sword.
"All right, people, don't do something you'll regret."
Sabrina raised her hands to calm everyone down.
"We're not here to stop you. We're chasing someone, a little boy."
"If the villain fighting Merlin inside is a little boy, the world is certainly doomed," the third knight said.
There was another eardrum rumbling explosion, and part of the castle's walls crumbled into dust.
"This sorcerer, can you take us to him?"
Sabrina asked.
"Take you back into the castle?"
the third knight cried.
"Are you daft?" "If you won't take us, we'll go on our own."
Daphne took slow, deliberate steps forward in her armor. It wasn't long before she tipped over face first.
"Stupid suit of armor. Whose idea was it to wear 200 pounds of metal into battle? A duckling could kill me right now."
Sabrina and Puck helped the little girl to her feet. Once she was up, the other knights dismounted and helped them remove some of the heavier pieces of armor. When the first knight, who introduced himself as Sir Port, removed Sabrina's helmet, he nearly took her nose with it. Soon, the girls were moving about a bit more freely.
"You're fools," Sir Port said. "But we'll take you back to the castle."
The dodo cleared his throat.
"Perhaps we should wait here until all the fighting is over."
"Remember the deal, bird," Sabrina chirped. "We won't come back for you."
"I must object," the rabbit interjected as he polished his monocle. "The two of you have taken on roles in this story. We have a freedom you do not. Any number of horrible things could happen to you. Perhaps it would be wise to entrust your yarn to us, just in case."
Sabrina eyed the group suspiciously. "The yarn is ours, Buster." The white rabbit threw up his paws.
"Of course, of course. Just a suggestion."
Despite their vocal complaints, Sabrina didn't turn back to see if the characters were following. She, Puck, Daphne, and the three knights on horseback climbed up the steep hill and crossed a wide wooden drawbridge over a black and foul-smelling moat. Through a great arch, they could see a smoke-filled castle courtyard. As they entered, Sabrina spotted a crowd of panicked knights, ladies-in-waiting, and court jesters rushing about willy-nilly, trying to avoid a terrific battle. The fighting seemed to be coming from the center of the courtyard. Sabrina could feel the familiar tingle of enchantments all around her, though the sonic booms and flashes of white-hot light were all the evidence she needed to determine that someone was wielding some very powerful magic. They pushed their way through the crowd and eventually found a space with a view of the conflict. The power of the attacks was so intense that Sabrina had to shield her eyes, but inside the fire and light, she could make out two figures. They circled each other with hands of fire and eyes burning with raw power. The air crackled with energy every time one of them made the slightest movement.
"What's happening?"
Daphne asked a tall, handsome man with flowing black hair. When Sabrina looked up into his face, she immediately recognized him as Sir Lancelot, one of Fairyport Landing's dashing volunteer firefighters. Granny Relda had recently purchased a Firefighters of Fairyport Landing calendar, and when she took a peek at it, when it arrived in the mail, her face turned as red as a stoplight. Sabrina never saw the calendar again, and the old woman wouldn't say where it had gone. With his familiar face, she could place the story. They had stepped into the tale of King Arthur and his Knights of the Round Table.
"This cursed interloper hath stepped through an enchanted doorway in the midst of our castle," Lancelot said. "A battalion of noble knights and I naturally came to the defense of Camelot, but we were soon overwhelmed by the villain's magics. The king's advisor Merlin was called, and due to his experience with the black arts, has unleashed his ungodly powers on the editor's lackey."
"What did he say?"
Daphne asked. Sabrina shrugged. She had trouble understanding his real-life counterpart back home.
"Pinocchio sure has learned the ins and outs of that magic wand," Daphne said as they watched the fighting. "That's powerful magic for a little boy."
"Little boy?" Lancelot said. "The boy is not fighting Merlin. It's his father who is creating such chaos."
Sabrina strained to look into the battle once more. She could make out Merlin, old and feeble, fighting off a short, thin, balding man in a black suit.
"It's Mirror," she cried. "If he's fighting, where is Rodney?" Daphne said.
"Rodney?
Fine," Daphne said. "Where's what's-his-name?"
"If it's the child you speak of, he is there, with the queen,"
Lancelot said as he pointed across the courtyard to a slender, pale woman with blonde hair that hung to her hips. She wore an eggshell white silk dress, and her hair was embellished with tiny, delicate flowers. In her arms was a small boy with red hair and bright green eyes. The children shoved and forced their way through the crowd as they hurried to their brother. Most people were too distracted by the fighting to care they had been pushed, but they were also too distracted to move out of the way. Still, Sabrina pressed on, and soon she, Daphne, and Puck were standing before the lovely woman and the baby boy.
"Guinevere," Sabrina said.
She had met the woman a few times when her grandmother went on errands, and always found her to be sweet and polite. She was a stark contrast from her hot-headed husband, Arthur.
"Do I know you, child?" "The real you does," Sabrina said. "We're from outside the story," Daphne said.
Guinevere's eyes grew wide.
"Then word of our efforts has reached far and wide. Have you come to help liberate us?"
"Not exactly. The little boy you're holding is real, too.
He's our brother," Sabrina said.
Guinevere pointed to Mirror. Lightning bolts were coming out of his hands and eyes.
"He told me to guard him with my life," the queen said. "I fear he means it."
"He belongs with us," Sabrina said, as she took the boy into her arms. She looked into his face. She had never been so close to him, and only days ago she had no idea he existed. But now, looking into his eyes, smelling his skin, feeling his little fingers wrap around her neck, she could feel he was family. This strange boy was as familiar to her as her own sister. He was as much a part of her as her own hands.
"We have to get out of here while Mirror is distracted," Daphne said.
"Plus, that kid needs a diaper change," Puck added.
"I think that's you," Sabrina said. "But you're right." "What about Pinocchio?" Daphne said. "We made a deal with the editor."
Sabrina scanned the crowd, but there was no sign of the boy.
"I know a deal's a deal, Daphne, but we're in way over our heads. Let's take our brother and get out of here while we still can. Tell the ball of yarn to take us home."
For once, Daphne did not argue. She whispered her instructions into the ball, but it sat in her hand.
"We're not at the end of this story," she said. "The last thing that happens is a wounded Arthur is put in a boat with fairies, and they drift down a river. With things all messed up like this, I can't even begin to imagine where we might be in this story right now."
"Editor! Open the door!"
Puck shouted over the noise.
"What are you doing?"
Sabrina said.
"The editor said to call for him when we were ready," Puck said. "Editor! Where are you?"
"But we don't have Pinocchio yet," Sabrina said.
"A tiny detail when you consider we're about to be killed," the boy fairy shouted.
Suddenly, the ball of yarn rolled out of Daphne's hand and darted into the crowd. The children gave chase and struggled against the relentless tide of onlookers. Each step was a challenge as they were jostled and shoved mercilessly. But Sabrina couldn't have cared less. Her heart was full with joy. The child in her arms completed her family, and the hole inside her could start to mend itself. Daphne ran alongside with happy tears in her eyes. Even Puck, who despised the joy of others, had a tight grin on his face. For once, the Scarlet Hand had not succeeded. And then there was an explosion that knocked them off their feet. Sabrina checked to see if her brother was hurt, but besides a few startled cries, he was in perfect health. Puck helped her to her feet, but there was an eerie quiet in the courtyard, and then a troubled murmuring.
"He killed Merlin," a voice said near them. "I can't believe it. He actually killed him."
Then a familiar voice bellowed a demand that seemed to hover over the crowd like an angry cloud.
"Where is the boy?"
"Daddy,"
the child cried. The children looked at the toddler in shock.
"Daddy?" Daphne repeated. "Mirror isn't your daddy."
Her argument was cut short as an invisible wave raced through the crowd and forced a path from the center of the battle to the children. As the path cleared, Sabrina could see Merlin lying on his back, his empty eyes focused on the blue skies above. Standing over him was Mirror. Sabrina had seen his face full of rage before, but that was only when he appeared in the magic mirror. She had never seen the kind, soft face that she saw when she stepped inside the Hall of Wonders the slightest bit angry.
She quaked with fear. Daphne seemed just as terrified. Puck, however, stepped forward. For once, his bravado and boasting were gone. She had seen him fight giants, dragons, and jabberwockies with a gleam in his eye and a grin on his face. This time, he was deadly serious.
"It's over, Mirror," he said.
With a flip of his hand, Mirror tossed aside hundreds of people in the courtyard. Then he strolled forward with a smile on his face.
"So, the boy fairy comes to the rescue once more," Mirror said. "When we first met, I would never have thought you to be the hero. But look at you. Your hand is on your sword. Your face is hard. You're like a smelly James Dean, a rebel without a clue."
Puck said nothing.
"You've thrown your lot in with the Grimms. Not a bad decision. They're good people," Mirror continued, "if a little simple. Still, they would have treated you right."
"Would have?"
Puck said. "Oh, yes. But you wouldn't give me the child, and I was forced to kill you," Mirror said.
Puck smiled.
"You're welcome to try, you sorry excuse for a reflection. But I think you'll find the Trickster King more than formidable. If I were you, I'd walk out of this story before I break you into a million tiny pieces of glass."
"As stubborn as you are pungent," Mirror said, as he raised his hands. Sparks flickered out of his fingers, and his eyes glowed with power.
"I'm afraid you are going to make one very smelly corpse."